The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm if we have some time later on in the program. I know we haven't gone through very many emails of late, but hopefully we can get through a few here at the end of today's show. Well, there was an interesting opinion piece. I know we drew attention to Jeremiah Jacques' article, I believe last Friday. The article he had about Russia and China dangerously ahead of America in cyber attack ability, that was on the website, featured prominently over the weekend, the new trumpet.com, and you can probably still get to that with just a little bit of a scroll down the front page. In any event, this opinion piece today in the New York Times, Why Our Nuclear Weapons Can Be Hacked. Pretty dramatic title, and like so many of these dramatic titles, you see them here and there in the mainstream media, but they just are, I mean, they're just one of many, one of hundreds. They don't really stand out. They just get buried, and you move on to the next cycle, but it's worth pausing on a title like this, how that America's nuclear weapons could be hacked. This author says here, imagine the panic if we suddenly learned during the Cold War that a bulwark of America's nuclear deterrence could not even get off the ground because of an exploitable deficiency in its control network. We had such an Achilles heel. That's the phrase he uses. You should be familiar with that if you've read any of our literature, and if you're familiar with the prophecy over in Ezekiel 7. I'll get to that verse here in just a second. But he says here, we had such an Achilles heel not so long ago. Minutemen missiles were vulnerable to a disabling cyber attack, and no one realized it for many years. And he goes back and recounts this incident from 2010 when 50 of America's nuclear-armed Minutemen missiles were basically, well, they weren't even appearing on monitors for an hour. They didn't know what happened to them, or if someone had taken control of them. As it turns out, it was the cause of the malfunction was I guess a circuit card that had been improperly installed. But he talks about how that the military in the lead up to this time had been looking at a number of scenarios where they could be attacked, cyber attacks, and how that they were vulnerable. That's an example from 2010. He also goes back to something that happened in the mid 1990s, when the Pentagon learned of this firewall breach that could have allowed outside hackers to gain control over this naval radio transmitter in Maine that's used to launch ballistic missiles from submarines patrolling the Atlantic. And it talked about how that the Navy then had to make some pretty dramatic changes thereafter on just how they would fire missiles to make sure that they would check and then double check the order so that they weren't acting on a hack. The article says here, cyber warfare raises a host of other fears. Could a foreign agent launch another country's missiles against a third country? We don't know. Could a launch be set off by false early warning data that had been corrupted by hackers? This is an especially grave concern because the president has only 3 to 6 minutes to decide how to respond to an apparent nuclear attack. So if there's an attack, and let's suppose it's a cyber attack, you're talking about 3 to 6 minutes that the President of the United States has to make a decision. This opinion piece at the New York Times today, it says, this is the stuff of nightmares, and there will always be some doubt about our vulnerability. We lack adequate control over the supply chain for nuclear components, from design to manufacture to maintenance. We get much of our hardware and software off the shelf from commercial sources that could be infected by malware. Imagine that, the U.S. government, the U.S. military, getting a lot of its hardware and software off the shelf, direct from the same commercial source that you probably use. It says, we nevertheless routinely use them in critical networks. This loose security invites an attempt at an attack with catastrophic consequences. This is what Jeremiah Jacques was writing about last week, and how that experts are already noting that Russia and China are dangerously ahead of America in this ability, in this cyber attacking ability. I mean, look at some of the headlines from the past 2 or 3 years. And all of the attacks, at least the ones that we know about, that's all that's been reported on. If there's attacks against military institutions that we don't know about, I mean, you can see why the military, as I said last week, would keep that confidential. But even the attacks that we know of, I mean, some of these have been catastrophic. It says here, finally, the risk would grow exponentially if an insider, wittingly or not, shares passwords, inserts infected thumb drives, or otherwise facilitates illicit access to critical computers. Well, this author then goes on to talk about how that this is all a good reason for the United States and Russia to turn off the switches on so many of their most powerful weapons, to dismantle everything on both sides, as if Russia would be right on board with that. But this is the sort of thing that you often hear liberals talk about. Look, it's a dangerous world, and so everyone needs to disarm. Well, it sounds great, and that's what they were talking about in the 1930s. But what about when the people controlling so many of those nuclear weapons are madmen, power-hungry, tyrants, dictators? What if they hate the United States? I mean, you add that to this equation, the ability of China and Russia, for example, to hack into our computer systems. And then look, of course, at what those countries are doing as well, leaving aside cyber attacks. Look at what they're doing on the actual battlefield. As I say, Friday at thetrumpet.com, we had this piece on Russia and China and how that they have the capacity now to carry out critical cyber attacks. They're ahead of the United States, at least on this battlefield. Well, it was my father who, back in 1999, 18 years ago, who warned about America's Achilles heel, saying that our dependence on this technology, it's going to come back to bite us. It's going to come back on us. It's making us vulnerable. All of these computer-based systems. My father wrote, again, this is from 18 years ago, one of the main reasons we won World War II was because the British broke German radio code. We knew about most of their war plans in advance. Quite a gigantic advantage. Some experts think we would have lost the war without that knowledge. I mean, there's all these miracles that happened in World War II to spare the United States and Britain. The day of those miracles is long gone. My father said we could lose the next war before we even begin if somebody breaks our military codes. I mean, what if it's reversed? Look at how vulnerable we are to an attack. Well, you look at what prophecy says. As I mentioned, that verse in Ezekiel 7, verse 14, they've blown the trumpet even to make all ready, but none goes to battle. The trumpet is blown, but no one goes to battle. Could this be because of a massive cyber attack? Some sort of computer terrorism. Well, that's what your Bible has to say. And there's others, like I said yesterday, other prophecies where the United States is not even mentioned, like Daniel 11:40. I mean, there's just, the trumpet is blown, but there's no one in Manasseh to rush to battle. I mean, and this indicates here that everyone's expecting our people to do something. The trumpet is blowing, after all. But then, astonishingly, no one goes to battle. Pretty amazing prophecy for sure. That's Ezekiel 7 and verse 14. There's another piece here from War on the Rocks. Really, again, just kind of summarizing a lot of these details that we touch on day in and day out. And I love these kinds of pieces because it kind of puts everything together from over the past 3-4 weeks, or in this case, over the past couple of years. Just the dramatic changes taking place in Germany. Germany's new defense pragmatism. And the title is that it's this new pragmatism, it's not measured in euros. And it talks about, just from the last few weeks, last month, the United States sending its diplomats over to Europe. Secretary of Defense James Mattis, Vice President Mike Pence, he went over there as well. And of course, number one item on the to-do list was to tell Europe, and Germany in particular, that you've got to meet the NATO target of spending. That's 2% of your GDP. 2% of your defense. As if that's the only change here that's happening. The fact that Germany's gone from, what is it, 1.2% and will soon go to 2%? Like, it's just this little incremental change. And this article at War on the Rocks, it says that misses the whole point here of what's happening and what has been happening. It says the real transformation for Germany's defense policy is not the planned increase of defense spending, but its new pragmatism in pushing Europe towards cooperation on military matters. See, that's what's really happening here. I mean, there's a change in Germany's attitude. There's a change in what's happening on the continent. The nations of Europe are now coming together militarily. And for the longest time, they resisted against it. Too much squabbling. I mean, it was spearheaded from all the bureaucrats in Brussels. Now it's coming on in a different manner with all these bilateral arrangements. But War on the Rock says here, by putting the focus on the 2% goal and ignoring the reality of Germany's organizational and political difficulties in swiftly reaching this target, the U.S. administration perhaps unintentionally triggered the stereotypical portrayal of Germany as a reluctant power. That's the way it's being perceived. You're not spending enough. You've got to get it up to 2%. Well, and then Germany responds, well, we're not sure we can do it this swiftly. Well, okay, they're the reluctant power then. Well, okay, if this is what big bad United States wants us to do, I guess we'll go ahead. That's the stereotypical portrayal. And it's not reality. It's not based in the truth. This, as we've been saying over and again, this is Germany's opportunity, and they are seizing control of their opportunity. This article talks about the far-reaching changes in Germany's military activities just in the last few years. It says Germany's already stepping up its military role in close cooperation with neighbors and advocates for German, or rather for European priorities. In the face of crises across the continent. You see, there's all these crises. And we've been telling you this. We've been preparing you for this. The refugee crisis, the euro crisis, the crisis in leadership. Now all the military threats coming from Russia and elsewhere. The spread of ISIS, the attacks on the European continent, the terrorist attacks. Donald Trump's threat of leaving NATO high and dry. And listen to this. It says, in recent weeks, Germany has taken concrete action in bolstering European defense with its neighbors on the continent. The broad German initiative, which was dubbed by one newspaper as the transformation of the German forces to a European anchor army, included a long list of bilateral agreements. So it's no longer, hey, the bureaucrats in Brussels say we need to come together, and everyone says, yeah, that sounds great, and then nothing ever happens. Well, now things are happening. It says, in capabilities across land, sea, and air, Germany has initiated partnerships with European neighbors. Get that. Germany has initiated this. Germany, as many are encouraging it to do, Germany is taking the lead. It goes on and gives all these examples, a number of which we've talked about on the program and written about at thetrumpet.com. The joint procurement and maintenance programs with Norway on submarines, the Lockheed transport aircraft with France, the tanker aircraft. These are all arrangements or agreements, partnerships. Tanker aircraft with the Benelux in Norway, and drones with France and Italy. All of this is underway right now. All of this is happening right now. It says, while not all details on these plans are fixed, the defense spending on aircrafts and submarines alone will amount to several billion euros. In addition, Germany's creating a joint military structure, together with Romania and the Czech Republic. So you have this new push, as it says later on in the article. All these bilateral agreements, all of this integration, initiated by Germany. And I mean, you have some politicians in Europe still trying to avoid using the term European army. Others aren't quite so reluctant to use it. Others are saying that's what we need. But it says here, Europe started to integrate its military through a bottom-up approach. It talks about how that for so many years, when they were just trying to do it from Brussels, they weren't getting anywhere because no one could agree on it. And so now it's reversed. Now it's a bottom-up approach. It says, rather than organizing Europe's national forces from the EU level, defense ministries interwove their militaries through bilateral agreements. EU member states are less concerned about the specific form of the defense cooperation, but more about its function. Well, who cares if it's spearheaded from Brussels? What we need is a functioning military. That's what European leaders realize that they need. That's what German leaders realize that they need. It's more about its function. How to achieve and maintain a full spectrum of military capabilities that allows Europeans to respond to external crises without depending on the infrastructure and capabilities of the United States. That's the direction. It's already in motion. How are we going to be able to respond to crises, external crises, without the United States? It says later in this article that, I mean, you talk about changing moods in Germany. It says later that 7 out of 10 Germans, that's 70%, they think Germany can no longer trust the United States. How's that for a changing mood? How's that for a new identity, a post-World War II identity crisis? It's over. They're regaining their identity. As that, what was that AFD speaker back in January? Huque, I think his name was. Talking about how that we, you know, we've always seen ourselves as a vanquished people since the end of World War II. We need to embrace our history. We need to be proud of our identity. We need to be proud nationalists. Just to finish this piece, again, this is War on the Rocks. It says here, it would be unwise to disregard the evolutionary changes that have occurred in the last couple of years. These are revolutionary changes we're talking about. In contrast to past efforts, these changes are designed by defense ministries and not by foreign ministries and European politicians. I mean, these are actual defense ministries that are taking these actions. And again, it's initiated. It's initiated by Germany. The changes alter the shape of the armed forces and thus go beyond the political debates of recent years on the competences of EU institutions. At the same time, Germany's attitude to the use of military forces has shifted as crises hit closer to home and have put Germany's favorite project, a united Europe, at risk. Germany reacted and is taking substantial action in increasing its contribution to European, not national, defense. So it's going to save this European project. Now it's going to come out looking a lot different than it is right now, or than what it looks like right now. But this is Germany's pet project. It's wanted to dominate Europe for a long, long time. And now with Europe on the brink, Germany is stronger than ever. How about that? That's brought out in another piece that I think I have here in my notes. It was in something I read this morning anyway. But another one here from the American Interest. This is from about a week ago, pointing out how that the real trade challenge is Germany, not China. I mean, President Trump's he's putting China in the crosshairs. But when you think about trade imbalances, when you think about the long-term challenges, it's Germany that's going to be the real challenge. That's what this piece is bringing out. It refers to a Wall Street Journal piece from, earlier in March, a couple of weeks ago. The Journal talking about, it quotes the Journal, and this is what it says: China bears the brunt of U.S. anger over unfair trade, but Germany's foreign surpluses are now far larger and may be more consequential for America's enemy and the rest of the world. More consequential for America's economy and the rest of the world. Now, you put all this together with what my father has prophesied there in that Ezekiel booklet, and also the Russia and China in Prophecy booklet about the economic siege. I talked about this briefly yesterday. The prophecies in Deuteronomy, in Ezekiel 4, and how that the whole world essentially is going to come together against the United States. This Wall Street Journal piece that's quoted in the American Interest article, it says low-wage Chinese workers have put downward pressure on U.S. manufacturing wages for years, but Germany's industries compete more directly with U.S. industries. It says 9 of Germany's 10 top export categories, such as machinery and electronic equipment, are the same as the U.S.'s top 10 exports. And then it talks about the currency manipulation, something that the Trump administration has pointed out, how that the weak euro has benefited Germany. Germany's been behind the euro crisis. Germany's the dominant power economically. And now the euro is weak, and it's been weakening for the past 3 years against the U.S. dollar. And how that this benefits Germany, giving German companies that extra edge. Well, this American Interest piece, it says here that Germany is abusing the world trade system in a way that China and Mexico are not. I mean, President Trump is singling out those two, China and Mexico. Mexico! As if little Mexico is bringing the United States down. But look, it's Germany. That's the real concern here. It's Germany that's going to be the real challenge. You put this together with what I said in the previous piece. That, you know, looking at the 2% of GDP for defense, that misses the point. Look at what Germany's already doing. Look at what it's doing with Italy, with France, with Norway, with the Benelux nations, with the Netherlands. All of these initiated partnerships with Germany's neighbors. This American interest piece, it says, whatever may have been the case in the past, China is not depending on an undervalued renminbi to prop up its exports. If anything, China's worried that its currency will fall too low. And globally, Mexico is running a trade deficit, though like most countries, it has a surplus with the United States. I mean, looking at it in the big picture, Mexico has a trade deficit. By contrast, Germany's policies in Europe contribute to a massive undervaluing of the euro, and German exporters are therefore able to enjoy huge international sales that, without the currency distortion, they could not achieve. I mean, this boom in Germany, it just wouldn't be happening if not for these unfair trade practices. Already they have the upper hand. Now think about what happens as they reach out to China and the nations of the East when America starts putting up all these trade barriers. It says here, finally, or at least a little further down, the euro crisis and the subsequent lost decade of growth in Club Med and weaker European economies was good for Germany. Germany benefited from the crisis. We had an article back in early 2009. My father, building on a short piece that Richard Palmer put together, my father asking, did the Holy Roman Empire plan the Greek crisis? Germany was behind it, because it's benefited Germany. And then, of course, when it comes time for the bailout, Germany's in the power position there too. Okay, well, we'll bail you out, but you've got to meet these austerity measures. This article, this American interest piece says, Europe is weaker. It's a weaker entity than it was in 2007, but Germany is a stronger country. And so all the headlines, all the news, the European project is failing. It's falling apart. It's weak today, and it is weak. But who's stronger? Who is much stronger than it was in 2007? We're witnessing a dramatic transformation in German politics. Well, even more so as we look at the months ahead. German military activities, German trade, the German economy, and all this happening, all of this coinciding with this rapidly changing mood in Germany, this more nationalist mood in Germany. No more an identity crisis. No way. It talks about some of these trade practices and how that, you know, the German establishment likes to think of itself as being this way or that way. But it says here the establishment is not really aware of how ruthlessly, if unconsciously, nationalist German policy has actually become. I mean, with respect to trade and economic policies, Germany has been ruthless. It's been ruthless. Further on, it says, unwilling to acknowledge that it pursues a ruthlessly mercantilist trade policy and that it has sacrificed European solidarity to preserve German political harmony at home, Germany has become less an upholder of Western order than a problem for the West. I mean, it's becoming a real problem here. Here's the real trade challenge. But it says here it's hard for Germans to recognize this painful reality. I'm coming near to the end here. It says the other European countries no longer have the power to force Germany to rethink its European policy. What did Margaret Thatcher say back in the mid-1990s? You haven't anchored Germany to Europe. You've anchored Europe to Germany. She said that more than 20 years ago. And now here's this American interest piece saying, look, the neighbors, the powerful neighbors, France and Britain, they're not able to really influence Germany in one direction or another. I mean, France hopes to. Britain's on the way out, though. So how is Germany going to be pressured in one direction or another? They're not going to be. They're going to continue to pursue German interests and establish all of these relationships, these military alliances with its neighbors, these bilateral agreements. Forget about Brussels. This is being spearheaded from Berlin. It says, finally, at the American interest, if the U.S. perspective on Germany changes, and Germany is no longer seen as a loyal pillar of the West, upholding the principles of liberal order, but a reckless and mercantilist power that undermines Europe and damages the U.S. economy in a blind quest for stability, how solid is the basis of the U.S.-German relationship then? I mean, how solid is this relationship, really? I mean, we've been lovers for so long. Close ties between America and Germany. But we're seeing, as I said earlier, a dramatic transformation. Look over at this prophecy in Daniel chapter 2. This Daniel 2 image, this framework for Bible prophecy, right here in Daniel. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, of course, talked about these prophecies. He wrote about these prophecies. He sounded the alarm. He said, I mean, we've played clips for you before, sound bites from messages from his radio program. He said this back in 1950. He predicted that the world's going to be stunned. The world's going to be dumbfounded when they see Germany emerge suddenly with power that even Adolf Hitler didn't have. Because it's Germany, and of course, these 10 nations in Europe, these 10 kings. Mr. Armstrong said in 1950 that some of those 10 would probably come from Eastern Europe, puppets of Russia. Listen, he said that in 1950. And sure enough, we see these puppets of Russia. They're now part of the EU, and when the EU downsizes, it's probably going to be a mix of 5 from the West and 5 from the East. I've played clips for you before, or at least given the quote. I forget if it was a soundbite or a quote, where Mr. Armstrong even named names. These countries are probably going to swing into Germany's orbit. Well, it says here in Daniel 2, verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaks all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. So this fourth kingdom, this is the Roman Empire, which attained world domination around the time of 30 BC, and it continued this empire for some 500 years. Then it was crushed. But then there were to be 10 resurrections, or the final 7 being a resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Verse 41 says, and whereas you saw the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, it says. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Strength, you see, like Germany. And then some that aren't as strong. Germany's neighbors. Iron and clay, 10 toes. A mixture of iron and clay mixed together. Contemporaneous kings, these 10. The same is prophesied in Revelation 17:12. It's going to come on the scene for a short time, these prophecies bring out. But while it lasts, it's going to have the strength of that old ancient Roman Empire, that iron-like strength We're witnessing the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, the one that's going to exist right up to the return of Christ. And it's not going to go on for 15, 20, or 30 years. It's just going to be a few short years. Verse 43 in the Revised Standard says, "And as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage. But they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay." It's not a long-running empire. It's a short lifespan. And so you look at even the fractious nature of the EU today. All of the squabbling. I mean, the core's coming together. You see these bilateral arrangements, as I say. But all the division, all the strife, that's prophesied. And in many ways, the EU needs to fall apart in order for it to be rebuilt the way the Bible defines it to be. 10 kings. 10 nations. It's going to come out considerably smaller than what it is today. And as my father, we played this clip for you, I think, last week. But as he said on the Key of David back in 2010, you watch. You watch and see if it happens. See if this doesn't happen. I mean, the Bible says it will. So if it does, where will you stand? Where will you be when it happens? Verse 44 says, "And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Lang's commentary says, "While these kings are still reigning." So that establishes the time element here. It's in the days of these kings that we now see forming. It's in the days of these kings that God will set up a kingdom that won't ever be destroyed, a kingdom that won't be left to human beings to govern, a kingdom set up and established and administered by the resurrected family of God, the Spirit begotten and born children of God, along with Jesus Christ, returning to this earth in power and glory, returning to this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. When we come back, we might cover a couple more news items here before we go through a few emails that have come in over the last week or so. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The world is hopelessly confused about Bible history and prophecy. Understanding the Daniel 2 image could clear up most of that confusion. The Daniel 2 image gives an overview of history and prophecy like nothing else in the Bible. The Bible is a masterful work that should be studied in its entirety. The book of Daniel and the images described therein actually unlock the meaning of the prophecies in the book of Revelation. Our free booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, explains the incredible prophecies contained in these two books. Studied alongside your Bible, this booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, will bring the history and prophecy of your Bible to life. Request your free copy today. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
One theme that really has been repeated in the last few weeks, like as I said last week, Jeremiah Jacques was the one who used this uh, this phrase initially in one of his trumpet articles, how that the world is primed for conflict. Yesterday we went through quite a lot there in the Middle East. Iran's expanding its sphere of influence. We talked about that little nation of Djibouti right there at the Bab el-Mandeb Straits across the way from Yemen. 30 kilometers or so separate these two nations. And then there's all these military bases from foreign nations situated there in Djibouti, including one that's nearly complete that China is constructing. This article here from the South China Post, it says, as overseas ambitions expand, China plans 400% increase to Marine Corps. Now, overall, the article says later, the numbers are being reduced in the Army, but in the Marine Corps, to service these many overseas operations, they are, as so many other nations are, they are expanding their military power. It says here China plans to increase the size of its Marine Corps from about 20,000 to 100,000 personnel to protect the nation's maritime lifelines and its growing interests overseas. Its growing interests. Why would China have so many new interests overseas? And same with Russia. You look at Germany and the power position with respect to trade. It says some members would be stationed, speaking of this Marine Corps, some would be stationed at ports China operates in Djibouti in the Horn of Africa and Gwadar in southwest Pakistan. A bigger corps could be deployed much farther afield as the Navy takes on more challenges, more and more challenges, a world primed for conflict. It talks about this base that China's constructing there in Djibouti, one of the world's busiest waterways. We've talked about how important or crucial these sea gates are. Go back and listen to yesterday's program if you like. That's posted, by the way, at thetrumpet.com. You can get to the program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, on SoundCloud, or have it come to your phone through iTunes, and just get an update every day. Take it around with you, or listen to the live stream at thetrumpet.com. It talks about all of these powers with these sizable bases in Djibouti. And I think that the U.S. base there has 4,000 people or 4,000 personnel. But some are putting this new Chinese base at about 10,000. It's near completion, this other article says from Defense Tech. They're estimating that this Chinese military base in Djibouti, it's scheduled to be finished or operational later this summer. And it's going to be right down the road from Camp Lemonnier, one of the Pentagon's most important foreign military establishments or installations. Just down the road, here's this Chinese base. The world for sure, is being primed for conflict. When we come back, we'll go through these few emails we've been getting over the last week. You're listening, once again, to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
This first email here comes from one of our regular listeners in the Bahamas. And as you know, we have people listening in from all over the world. It's a small audience, but it certainly is diverse and spread across the earth, for sure. From the Bahamas, he writes, even though I watch the news, it's a blessing to go to PCG Literature website, TD, Trumpet Hour, for the proper godly perspective. Thank all of your staff for a job well done in research and support to the daily airings. I have been meaning to write since the summer of 2016, and or rather when the TDs highlighted the PYC and Ronald and Nancy Reagan. I have a special affinity for the young people because I left God for 24 years, and it took a real negative toll on my life. Though I was both too blind and rebellious to see or admit it, it warms my heart watching the strides the youth are making in God's church. Listening to the young men contribute to your programs is awesome and is testament to the fact that with training and guidance God's way, it is the greatest gift that we can give them. I pray that our young people will see this beautiful way and cling to it, not just for themselves, but for their future physical and spiritual families. With each program that airs, he says, there is such a wealth of not just knowledge but understanding, the vital missing link that all other news outlets do not have. Never mind the tickers across the screen and the bold graphics rushing out from the center of the screen. It means nothing without the understanding. And I'm thankful that God makes this available for all the world, so blinded by emotion and ignorance. And then he says, finally, please do not forget to tell Sam, the ever-diligent Sam, that he has a fan here in the Bahamas. So Sam has a fan in the Bahamas. Another one here comes from Massachusetts, a gal who listens to the broadcast sometimes through the live stream and sometimes on KPCG with the podcast. It says here, only a moment to stop while preparing for the Sabbath. I'm at the point in today's show where one described Churchill's mental abilities in such an awesome way. Proficiency in gathering a chaos of information, mastering it, assembling, refracting it in a terrific blinding beam. That was from last Friday's program on concentration. She says here, God's work is full of this kind of miracle in the lives of men and women whose example we can see through the church, KPCG, various websites, etc. However, this particular description helps to encapsulate what I so often think of when I think of your daily schedule and output with the Trumpet Daily and then so many other responsibilities. I think it's safe to say that most of us agree that God is... Well, she goes on and talks about how there's just Churchills all around because of what God's producing through the website, through the Key of David, through the programs, and so on. And she expresses quite a lot of thanks here at the end. Another one comes from Edmond, Oklahoma, right there near our headquarters campus. It says, just wanted to send some thoughts after listening to the latest program on wiretapping. That's from last Tuesday, I believe. I find myself so often laughing as I listen to your comments, like one would laugh watching a black comedy, the absurdity of the world we live in. God told us it would be like this, and now it's here. I want you to know how valuable it is to listen to the Trumpet Daily, like an anchor in a world gone insane. And I know all of the listeners feel this way. What an honor to be part of this work. Another one here coming from Arizona. It says, great job marrying Bible prophecy to end-time current events, painting a clear and electrifying picture of the King of the South's pushes that propels the world into truly the war to end all wars, because Christ is coming to stop the wars before all life is annihilated and to establish God's kingdom on this earth. A time when all people will learn to live God's way of love and outgoing concern. A time when, for the first time ever, all people will live in peace with abundance and joy. Another one here comes from Ontario, Canada. This is from one of our lady listeners. Really appreciate yesterday's program. This is referring to to the one where we played Paul Harvey's bit, If I Were the Devil, from yesterday, Monday show. It says, when I heard Paul Harvey's voice, it reminded me of when I drove my boys to school about 7 to 8 years ago while listening to AM talk radio. They would play Paul Harvey on different stories he spoke and some words of wisdom. Yesterday's show, it says, ties in nicely with your programs on Sir Winston Churchill. Thank you and your staff for putting that together. Well, if you heard that at the end of the show, it was an alarm or a warning in so many ways, and particularly when you look at when he first gave that monologue. It was back in 1965, right in the midst of this cultural revolution. And here the United States is so much worse morally since then, 50 years on. Another one here. This comes from New Mexico. It says, finally, your point that the devil has deceived the world religions is fact. The devil is causing religious leaders to twist biblical truths. Like I wrote to you before, many churches even discourage the talk about the imminent second coming of the Messiah. In addition, they claim that at the beginning of the millennium, Antichrist will come on earth. The devil, through this deception, is laying the groundwork for both the King of the North and the kings of the East to resist the glorious return of our Messiah and Savior, Jesus Christ. And then one final one here from a female listener. It says, I just viewed your updated website. Very nice. If you'd like to comment on the website, by the way, you can send those comments, whether positive or negative. We'll take both. As I said yesterday, we're in the process of tweaking a few things. There's definitely some things that we're wanting to change here and there. But we're also very excited about capitalizing more on the email list that we've accumulated over the years. Tens of thousands of people that have signed up for the Trumpet Weekly, email publication. We're hoping to establish more regular contact with those who have subscribed over the years. In any event, she says here, I just viewed the updated website. Very nice, very streamlined and professional. Helps one navigate the site better. Thank you so much for all your tireless efforts to warn and report on what is truly important in the midst of all the fluff that we've been getting. If you'd like to email the show, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.